Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, 12:09 on this Thursday afternoon. Dennis Rodkin joins us this week as well from Crane Chicago Business. He writes about real estate. Mr. Rodkin, welcome to the studio.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And I want to go in with you on a condo. Let's find a condo, maybe on Chicago Avenue or somewhere up, you know, Magnificent Mile. We'll drop maybe, what, $600,000-$700,000.
Put another fix up. Yeah.
Right? Are you good with electrical? I'll do the plumbing.
I'm good with calling a guy who can do electrical. How's that?
But it's become this thing right now where, I mean, it's not uncommon for people to buy houses, rehab them, and flip them and developing neighbors and such. But for downtown condos, that's a growing trend?
It is. It's not a massive trend. I found a couple dozen. But the reason it's going on right now is there are no new condos being built. So, and there are a lot of condos that were built in the 80s and in many cases were owned from the 80s to today by the same owner. So never updated. You know, they have the white vinyl cabinets or, you know, whatever was cool in the 80s. And you and I as homeowners.
Sadly, yes, it was cool in the 80s.
Yeah, well, at the black and white kitchen, that sort of thing.
Right.
And as homeowners, we might find it sort of daunting to redo the condo because there are a lot of rules that, you know, you got to cover the hallways so people aren't stepping in construction dust. You've got to use the loading docks at certain times. So developers, builders, rehabbers are doing this and then reselling them for free. And basically what happens is as the end user, as the buyer, we sort of pay a premium for buying it done up as new over what we might have paid if we bought it and did the rehab.
And did the work yourselves. But, I mean, I purchased a couple condos in my life, I think, and I guess I did little things, but I never thought of a condo as undergoing a complete overhaul, but I guess why not?
Well, don't forget, we're talking about a higher end of the market than you and I occupy.
Oh, really? You don't know about my condos.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that big bank account you've got.
You've never been on Burling?
you're the one buying that penthouse. Right. I need to. Okay, that's good. So these are generally upper, higher end people. And one of the things, a lot of these condos on downtown are bought by people who have a home in the suburbs, may have a home in Florida, whatever. So I don't really want to do a rehab project, but I want something that is fine, that is really well done. So we're primarily talking about people buying at that level.
I'm interested in the dearth of condos because we're about to have a flood of apartments, aren't we?
Right.
There's a lot of apartment construction going on.
We are in that flood. Some of them have already come on,
So it's like the generals fighting the last war in a way.
Exactly.
People were renting when the housing was in trouble and the economy was in trouble. Now people are ready for condos and they're going to say, look at this apartment.
Yeah, look at this rental. And if I'm looking for a downtown, if I'm that suburban person with a lot of money, want a weekend place in the city, a rental may not be quite as interesting to me. They are taking them. Some of these rentals are going to luxury people, to the luxury end of the market, to in-towns and stuff like that. But I'm probably buying it as an investment. Often when I buy an in-town, I expect that later we'll move in when the nest is completely empty in the suburbs. We may move in full time, and I may be buying it as an investment. So I'm more likely to go condo than apartment, and there aren't that many right now.
It'll be interesting to see when they catch on because one of the other things we're going to talk about, and I don't know if we will. Well, we will. Let's just do it right now.
Okay.
This development in Winnetka that they've been changing up, and there's a lawsuit there, but. They wanted to put in, what was it, almost 100 apartments in the beginning?
It was 120 luxury apartments right in the middle of downtown Winnetka.
And they've had trouble, but now they're adding some townhouses and condos.
Right.
And they're saying it's because there's now a demand for condos. It seems to me like maybe they're trying to appease the neighbors who don't want an apartment building in their hood.
Well, you also have to wonder, you know, what is the market for luxury condos in Winnetka? 120 is almost as many residences. I mean, that's a big chunk of residential for a small town like Winnetka. And if you suddenly add 120 apartments at high level of rent, what you're assuming is there is a very large market for that. They also have said that at the time they started the project, they couldn't get financing for condos because we were in the housing bust. Now they can get financing. But when you look at it, it was 120 rentals originally 3 years ago. Now it's down to 33. I think it's 33 rentals, 7, 20, 20 condos and 17 townhouses. I can't remember, but it's down to one quarter the number of rentals what it was, and it's about 80 units as opposed to 120 units. So you do see that shift away from, oh yeah, everybody's going to be renting, back to the idea that we buy.
And you talk about whether there's a market. I mean, it seems to me like that's a spot where you could create a market, because it's probably very close to a train station.
It's right across the street from the train station.
So if you build it, they will come there. You know, people want to get out of the city, live in the suburbs in a nice apartment right by the train.
But will they come there to rent?
That's
or will they come there to buy?
Well, it looks like they're going to have it. Well, I guess they'll have both of an option. But there's some legal trouble there.
Yeah.
But that's going to get built, it looks like.
Well, it got rejected by one Winnetka City panel Monday night. It has two more. I think it's in front of one later this week and one in January. And what those two city panels have to say could still be shot down by the city council, which it'll go in front of in January. But one has rejected it. One voted it down. I think it was 5-2 on Monday night. There's another to look at it. And you would assume that the city council would say, okay, don't build it. But the city council could still say, we don't care what you two said. We're going to go ahead and approve it.
That was our brief field trip to the suburbs. Let's come back down to the Magnificent Mile in the areas. Tell me the story about Peter Francis Geraci, the lawyer. We see him on TV.
Right.
And he had his eyes on this condo space, right, that they were going to develop. And then he was sort of thwarted. And they went to an appellate court, all the way to a court. It's just an unusual story to me.
Right. It's a long one. I'll make it brief. And we're in this period now where we're waiting to see if the other side appeals. He has won so far. The other side could appeal. If the other side doesn't appeal, as he put it, he now has the right to spend over $8 million on a penthouse, raw space that he's got to finish out.
So he's going to spend $8 million for the slab floor.
Space, right. And then it could be multiple millions. It could be as much as another $8 million to finish it out. They probably wouldn't go that far. But sometimes people spend the price of the raw space again to finish. So what happened was this reclusive Mexican billionaire, Mr. Larea, bought a condo downstairs in, this is the Ritz-Carlton, just a few blocks north of us here, bought a condo just below the penthouse level. And as I understand it, felt that the penthouses were overpriced, but wanted to get one of the penthouses. So he set up this right of first refusal deal when buying the penthouse, where if somebody comes in and makes an offer on this penthouse, you show me that offer and I'll have 24 hours to match it.
Okay.
Because his idea was, you're asking too much, so let me see what the market price is by seeing an offer. So Geraci, it was priced at 10.5. Peter Francis Geraci, the bankruptcy attorney everyone knows, makes an $8.6 million offer. The developer hands that to probably not Mr. Larea, probably his attorneys. I don't know for sure. And they don't believe it's a legitimate offer. Or apparently, they don't believe it's a legitimate offer because they say, we need to know who this is.
Right, we could be making up anything.
Exactly. You could just be saying, here's an offer. Look, miraculously, one fell from the sky. But they had previously written and signed a deal that said you get the offer without the name of the buyer in it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, according to Geraci's lawyers, what's going on is they're saying, well, we want this thing that we signed saying we couldn't get, you know, which is sort of a bizarre turnaround. So then it ends up in court for almost 14 months. They win once, Geraci wins the appeal. And in all that time, this penthouse on Erie, on Michigan and Erie, $8.5 million penthouse just
sitting there
unsold.
Right. Yeah. Well, someone will live there and someone will be very happy.
Well, it looks like it'll be Geraci living there. If Larea doesn't appeal, then Geraci can close on his purchase, and he says he intends to, even though it's been over a year and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, it would be more time until they get it finished.
Lots of nice tidbits in your story that we didn't have time to get to. So
it's almost a telenovela. There are even things that I couldn't get in there because of the space.
I encourage people to go to chicagobusiness.com and to read it. Dennis Rodkin, nice to see you again.
Thanks, Steve.
Kind of appropriate. We were talking with earlier, we were talking with Dennis Rodkin from Cranes about real estate. And joining us now in the WGN studio is Todd, I lost your name. Todd Jones, president of BBMC Mortgage. We're sitting here talking for 5 minutes, and then when it's time to remember, it's out of my head, especially after I was just bragging off the air, right? Nice to see you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Steve.
So you were a vet, right? You
Yes, I'm a 94 grad from West Point, served about 6 years in the Army, field artillery officer.
And then how did you get into this business?
Well, when I got out of the military, you know, like everybody, I had to look for a transition position, and finance stuck out to me. And based off an experience I had purchasing a home, which was a bad experience, I thought it might be a good idea for...
Okay, I want to ask you about that, but first, you said finance jumped out at you?
Yes.
I can't imagine finance ever jumping out at me. How does finance jump out at a guy?
Well, there was a organization here in Chicago called Household International that had a general management training program. And for somebody coming out of the military to do 6 week rotations for up to 2 years
nice.
And all the different aspects of the business was an education that I thought I could really use. And so that opportunity and stuck out to me.
So then you're buying and you run into trouble with the VA.
That's correct. I had a loan officer, a friend of mine who was also a West Point grad, steered me away from my VA benefits because he didn't understand it. I was buying a home that was over the conforming limits, and he thought that he couldn't do that. That's a myth and one of the many myths about VA loans. And so when I realized how much I overpaid because I was given bad information, I saw an opportunity to go try to rectify that.
Interesting. So you overpaid for your mortgage
yes.
because you didn't go through the VA loans.
I had to put 20% down because I did not use the VA loan where I could have put close to 0% down for a over-conforming limit mortgage.
So BBMC Mortgage then focuses on finding vets and working through the VA process with them. Is that the fair way to say it?
Yeah, Steve, I mean, we work with all customers, but we focus our opportunity, our passion is really serving veterans better than any mortgage company in America. And just a stat, there's about 16 million veteran homeowners in this country, and there's just about 1 million VA loans. And 99% of the time, the VA loan is the right loan for the veteran. And so there's a huge gap.
So why are they hard to get, or why is it the complication of the bureaucracy or the misunderstanding, or why is that?
It's completely based off of misunderstanding and people's goals not being aligned appropriately. Realtors, even loan officers, because they don't understand the program, think that they're harder to close and they steer customers away from them, which is really a disservice and what we like to say kind of stealing a veteran's benefit.
And it costs more to go elsewhere. I mean, you can get a better deal through a VA loan.
That's absolutely true.
What kind of benefits are there?
Well, typically the interest rate, because it's backed by an insurance program by the VA, there's a 25% protection for any investor. So there is a discounted rate effective for that because it's more secure. So there's a lower interest rate, typically a quarter lower than what you might see on your normal conforming loan. And there's also protections built in, particularly for active duty servicemen where foreclosures, for instance, can't happen if you're deployed.
Is it a one-time deal?
It is absolutely not a one-time deal, and that's one of the misconceptions.
Yeah, so you can do it over and over.
You can do it as many times as you want. Now, the down payment amount changes as you use it along the way. There's a certain entitlement that you have, and if you use the entire entitlement, then you no longer have that entitlement, but you still have access to the VA loan program.
Okay.
You would just have to have the appropriate amount of equity in your property, so you can still get the discounted interest rates.
Todd Jones is the president of BBMC Mortgage, and you'll take anybody, right?
Absolutely.
And we're talking about vets and programs, but you in general work with anyone when it comes to mortgages.
That's right. We want to get the word out in general. Right now we're trying to promote our sweepstakes. So to get the word out about a VA program, we want to give away a year's worth of mortgage payments to some lucky veteran out there.
I would have taken it right up to the veteran
yeah,
part.
Some lucky veteran's going to win. We're going to draw and we're going to announce on January 14th. So if you want to get involved with this, or if you know a veteran, there's really no reason not to sign up. You can go onto mybbmc.com/CT. All right, so mybbmc/CT, or you can call us at 1-800-24-RATES, and we'll get you entered into the contest.
Okay, so you don't have to have a VA loan now to enter the contest, or
you do
just,
not. You're just a veteran, and you don't even have to own
nice.
A home. You could be renting a home, and we'll pay your rent for a year if you're the winner.
Oh, sweet!
There's even a second place prize. It means a lot to me, and actually means a lot to about 80,000 fans who are in Philadelphia this weekend. But we're also going to send as a second place prize two tickets to the Army Navy game 2016 with airfare and hotel as well.
Right, I'm going to duck and then ask who won the game last week.
Navy won for the 14th year in a row. It pains me to say that, but I do have to say that my Black Knights played inspired. They were a 2-9 team going in, playing a 9-10. into nationally ranked Navy team with a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback. And the Black Knights had their opportunity to win the game at the very end. They were up at the halftime, and they threw an interception with 2 minutes left when they were on Navy's 40-yard line.
But, Todd, they lost, right?
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Steve, for reminding me.
Todd Jones, president of BBMC Mortgage. One more time, the website for people.
MyBBMC.com, MyBBMC.com/CT to sign up for the sweepstakes.
Excellent. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:37. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in on this Thursday afternoon. A little bit later from Choose Chicago, Jason Lesnevich will be here to talk about, I know there are a few holiday plays and things like that going on if you haven't got your plans, but I also want to ask him about, this is supposed to be a big year for an outdoor Chicago New Year's Eve festival. I don't know that they're going to try to rival New York City, but they're going to try to boost things up a little bit bigger than they have been, and we'll talk to Jason about that. Right now, Ian Scher from CNET is on the phone line. Ian, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, and I'm glad we're able to talk. Of course, we're doing it over a telephone, not over the internet, but Donald Trump might soon shut down our internet connection, right?
Yeah, it's a little interesting. You know, it's kind of this idea that if the terrorists are using the internet, then we're going to just take it away, right?
Well, okay, let's do the very basic logic, right? If your enemy is using this tool, why not take the tool away from him?
Right, and so that's the argument that Donald Trump made during the Republican debate, which happened earlier this week. Was really, he said, you know, let's be specific. He said that he wanted to shut down the web in ISIS-controlled Syria and Iraq, right? So the idea was that specific terrorist areas should just not be allowed. Now, of course, you know, we at CNET, we went out, we spoke with some experts, people who are involved with actually managing the internet today, and a lot of what came back to us is that this is a logistically almost impossible thing to do.
There's not like a big circuit breaker room where you could just turn off, you know, flip down Syria, turn that one off?
Exactly. And part of the problem that comes from this is that a lot of people don't understand how the internet works, right? At the end of the day, all the internet is a bunch of internet-connected computers. And there's not one line, there's not one cord that's connecting them all that they're all kind of talking through. They're actually talking to each other all the time. And so removing just one would be very hard. You'd actually have to have a coordination of many people outside of these countries to agree to shut off their access. And that's where it becomes very hard, not to mention even if you did that, then there are satellites who are beaming information up and down all the time. And so at the end of the day, it becomes very hard. And I think the way that it plays out is that we reached out to numerous companies that provide the backbone of the internet, people like Amazon, Cisco, Akamai, all these people, and they either declined to comment, did not immediately respond, or my favorite part, we were actually asked not to include them in some stories because they thought it was not a meaningful conversation. So I think it underscores kind of how hard it would be to do something like this, which, I mean, this type of debate has been going on beyond just internet connections, right? If we expanded to encryption and this idea of being able to protect information on a phone and making it so that it can't be hacked by the government or whatever, when you get to those parts of the conversation, then you have Silicon Valley saying this isn't possible either. We've created security that's good, and it's so good that we can't even get into it. So
they're talking about it on Capitol Hill today. The House Oversight Committee is talking to Homeland Security about, you know, whether the administration or the government should have done more to look at social media when it comes to people trying to come into this country on a visa. So that's one thing. But we can't shut the internet down. We can maybe keep a closer look at social media. And in Germany, there's something happening which, you know, I don't want to say earth-shattering because that's overstating it, but it could be a major shift when it comes to Facebook and Twitter and free speech on the internet, right? The idea is to get rid of hate speech, but it could be the opening up to a number of different doors.
Right. So it's really fascinating. You know, Germany has a lot of really interesting laws on the books. And one of them comes from the 50s, which is built around the issues around anti-Semitism and the Nazis and all of that. And what it was that it basically said that racism, from their point of view, was not part of their free speech laws. And so what they define racism as is when you are saying something that incites violence. right? So it's not so much I hate this group of people, but rather you should help me kill all these people. And so they are saying that that is illegal. It always has been. There's a lot of case law over the last, 60, 70 years where it's been built up that I would talk to someone at the German embassy. They helped me understand. And they said, you know, there's a lot of kind of when you're talking to a lawyer in Germany, they very clearly understand the difference between what we consider to be racist speech and what they consider to be racist speech. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Google have all come together and agreed with the German government to set up a system where they will remove what is considered hate speech from the internet whenever it's identified within Germany. And it will happen within 24 hours. And they're doing this. What's really fascinating is they're doing this by German law. So when you think about Facebook and Twitter and Google, they have standards that they've always followed, which we've written about on CNET many times. But they've always tried to apply these standards across the world.
Okay, so
they don't.
So Ian, then let's bring those two stories together, because
Yes. We
started by saying you can't shut down the internet, you can't close it off to certain people, and now we're talking about in Germany where you can take down hate speech in Germany. So does that mean that if, you know, I'm sitting in Chicago posting hate speech that can be read in Germany, that Facebook would take that down, or does it have to originate in Germany?
So the details are not immediately clear, and I asked about that myself, and I couldn't get a straight answer.
So I don't mean to pursue it, but then to get in the time we have. So would they put up a wall around the German border so that if I posted hate speech, they could read it in Arizona, but they couldn't in Berlin? Or do you know what happens?
It's unclear. And part of that is they've set up teams within the company, so it's not the government, who are going to apply these rules and follow the German law. So I think we're going to find out as it happens. And frankly, I don't think Facebook, Google, or Twitter knows how it's going to play out yet. I think it's going to be one of those things that people have to report it, and then they have to respond to it. So we're going to probably see some very interesting stuff. And if you remember, like when Google had its right to be forgotten stuff in Europe, where the European government said you had to be allowed to ask Google to remove information about you from the internet, you suddenly had some very interesting drama happening about news articles being pulled down and stuff like that over this law. So we're going to probably see it. It's going to be very weird in the beginning, and then it'll probably find some equilibrium as it goes on.
All right, we've got 1 minute left. I want to ask you one more Facebook question, because we've talked before about how Facebook has this rule you have to use your real name. And some transgender people and others have fought against that. It looks like Facebook is going to be relaxing that a little bit. Okay, that's all good. But I didn't realize, am I required on Facebook to use my real name, Steve Bertrand? I mean, why couldn't I just say my name is, you know, Ian Smith? They're not checking those names, are they?
They're not, but what they do is that I can report you and tell Facebook that that's not really your name. And that's where this all comes from, is that Facebook believes if you use your real authentic name on the internet, it's better. It makes what you say have more weight. It makes who you are more authentic.
More accountable, absolutely.
Right, and that's their belief. And so whether or not you agree with it, you're part of their service, that's what you have to deal with. And so I could report you if you weren't using your real name, and then Facebook would probably deactivate your profile. Now they're allowing you to appeal and say, look, Ian Smith is the name I use because either I'm a political refugee and I can't use my real name because it might lead the government to go after my family, or I'm a transgender person and I use this name in my normal life now, or I'm a victim of domestic violence and I can't use it because I might get tracked down. There's a lot more kind of Facebook is trying to be more understanding about why people wouldn't use their real names. But generally speaking, they still have these rules that you have to use your real name on the internet when it comes to Facebook. And that's just their way. Twitter and Google and a bunch of other people, they don't have these rules. You can be whomever you want. But with Facebook, they really want this to be a place where it's like a directory of real people.
You know what? That makes a lot more, and I agree with that. I think that's important, but it makes sense to me. You helped it out. So the idea is that it's going to be harder to tattletale on people and get them kicked off. They're going to be less reluctant to just kick people off. Ian Scher from CNET.com and from CNET. Listen, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're on 720 WGN.
Protesters taking this
between 1% and 2% today. That's your money on 720 WGN.
We're winding down on the business lunch on this Thursday afternoon, 12:52 now. Jason Lesnevich is in the studio from Choose Chicago. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And this is our last dance before the holidays. We talked earlier about some of the things to do, you know, in some of the shows and things like that. But I want to visit a couple of them again. First of all, the ballet, right? The Nutcracker is. Explain this for me. It's going away from Chicago, or it's leaving the auditorium, or what's different?
The auditorium, the Joffrey Ballet, this is the final season of their Nutcracker, which is, you know, Robert Joffrey founded, you know, the Joffrey Ballet.
So they will not
he
do it.
He wrote and composed it.
Right.
Next year, they will have a completely different version by a different composer and a different, choreographer.
So, I see. So the
version that so many of us know is going, this is their final season.
Okay, so the ballet will still be around next year. It'll just be a different version.
It will.
Well, that's good because I just bought a new pair of tights and I wanted to wear them more than once. All right, so that's off the list. The Lion King is in town. That's got to be huge over the holidays.
It is, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's been seen by so many millions of people across the world. Actually, 75 million, they're saying. And it started about 2 weeks ago and it's through January 17th. So definitely go out and see it. It's a family event. And
what are tickets like? Do you know? Are they hard to come by? Or are they?
You know, I haven't been tracking ticket sales,
right.
I'm assuming there's still some tickets left, although it's hugely popular. And it's a great moving performance.
I'm really bad at these shows because I never want to commit myself like 6 months in advance. So I never get like, I want to see Beautiful, too.
Absolutely.
And that's only here for a few more weeks, but I never like buy the tickets when you're supposed
to.
Yeah,
you really do need to buy early for some of these great productions.
All right, I want to talk about Bel Canto, which is an opera in Chicago, which made its world premiere here, right?
Yep, world premiere started about 2 weeks ago as well, and it's also through January 17th at the Lyric Opera.
And it was it's based on a novel written by Anne Patchett.
Yes, best-selling novel.
Yeah, and I know Anne. I've talked to her several times. Oh. But so what is fascinating to me about this is that it's about, in a way, a concert. The story is, in a way, a concert where terrorists come in and take the concert goers hostage.
Yes, you are right.
So it's not unlike what happened in Paris just a few weeks ago.
I know. It's a little scary with the contemporary news right now, but
I don't. Yeah, you know, Jason, I don't bring it up to scare people from going. I mean,
of course not.
Yeah.
But
it's just, it's
relevant.
Almost like a life imitating art imitating life kind of thing.
I agree. It's based on, you know, an American, you know, diva singer going over to Peru. And yes, terrorists, you know, storm the party where she's singing at and take everyone hostage.
It's been well received, though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the creative consultant is our very own Renee Fleming. So it's a wonderful production.
All right. One more thing. And this is the big one, really. Chicago Rising.
Yep.
Now, my idea of a Chicago New Year's Eve is to, you know, watch Mark Giangreco on TV. And Janet Davies, because that's what everyone does in Chicago.
Okay.
And apparently people have other ideas this year.
Yeah, you'll be watching Mario Lopez and watching bands like Chicago, the legendary rock band Chicago, and American Authors perform amongst about, I want to say, 10 to 12 different bands for 4 hours.
And where are they going to be?
They're going to be right outside the studio at Michigan and the River.
So really, it's the whole thing's outside?
There's a couple of indoor parties, one at Navy Pier. There's actually one right next door at Howls and Hood. But the major event, the fireworks show, will be right at the river. And you can watch a star rise to the top of the Hyatt Hotel right here on the river. And that is where it will be live broadcast by Telemundo and NBC5.
I guess they have to do something. Oh, so no Giangreco.
Not that I know.
Oh, okay. So it should have brought that up differently. So they're going to have a star. I wonder I guess you have to have something.
Yes.
I'm a little reluctant to, you know, imitate New York that way with the crystal ball, but.
Yeah, I know.
So just come downtown.
Yep.
See Chicago and some other bands.
Yes.
Well, that's good. They're hoping it goes well. Right.
Yeah, we're expecting large crowds. There's hotel packages at the various Hyatt properties where you get access to, you know, the broadcast area or the music stage.
Right. Okay. And it's not like we're going to be setting the river on fire. So
the
risk of things going badly are small.
I agree.
Right. And so everyone will have a great time.
Absolutely.
And so will you be there, Jason?
I may be there, yeah. Chi-Town Rising, ringing in the new year on December 31st.
Jason Lesnevich from Choose Chicago. Well, let me know how it goes because I probably won't be.
All right, I will.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.